वो याज्ञ इमे प्रजेशा दक्षादयो ये भवदादयश्च स्वर्लोकपाला खगलोकपाला निर्लोकपाला स्थललोकपाला Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, great generators of living beings like Daksha and Prajapati, yourselves, Narada and the Kumaras, heavenly demigods like Indra and Chandra, the leaders of the Bhurloka planets, the leaders of the earthly planets, the leaders of the lower planets, the leaders of the Gandharva planets, the leaders of the Vidyadhara planets, the leaders of the Charana Loka planets, the leaders of the Yakshas, Rakshas, and Uragas, the great sages, the great demons, the great atheists, and the great spacemen, as well as the dead bodies, evil spirits, satans, jinn, kushmandas, great aquatics, great beasts, and great birds, etc. In other words, anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, mental and perceptual dexterity, strength, forgiveness, beauty, modesty, opulence, and breeding, whether in form or formless, may appear to be the specific truth and the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Those in the list given above, beginning from the name Brahmaji, the first living creature within the universe, down to Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, Narada, and other powerful demigods, men, supermen, sages, rishis, and other lower creatures of extraordinary strength and opulence, including the dead bodies, satans, evil spirits, jinn, aquatics, birds, and beasts, may appear to be the Supreme Lord, but factually none of them is Supreme Lord. Every one of them possesses only a fragment of the great potencies of the Supreme Lord. The less intelligent man is surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomena, as the Aborigines are fearful of a great thunderbolt, a great and a gigantic banyan tree, or a great lofty mountain in the jungle. For such undeveloped human beings, merely the slight display of the Lord's potency is captivating. A still more advanced person is captivated by the powers of the demigods and the goddesses. Therefore, those who are simply astonished by the powers of anything in the creation of the Lord, without any factual information of the Lord Himself, are known as Shaktas, or worshippers of the great powers. The modern scientist is also captivated by the wonderful actions and reactions of the natural phenomena, and therefore is also a Shakta. These lower grade persons gradually rise to become Suryas, worshippers of the sun god, or Ganapatyas, worshippers of the mass of people, as Janata Janardhan or Daridra Narayan, etc., in the form of Ganapati, and then rise to the platform of worshipping Lord Shiva in search for the ever-existing soul, and then to the stage of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the Supersoul, etc., without any information of Govinda, Lord Krishna, who is the original Lord Vishnu. In other ways, some are worshippers of race, nationality, birds, beasts, evil spirits, Satans, etc. The general worship of Shanidev, the Lord of Distressful Condition, of Sitala Devi, the goddess of smallpox, is also common to the mass of people, and there are many foolish men who worship the mass of people or the poor class of men. So different persons, societies, and communities, etc., worship some of the potent manifestations of the Lord, wrongly accepting the powerful object as God. But in this verse it is advised by Brahmaji that none of them is the Supreme Lord. They are only borrowed plumes from the original Almighty Lord Sri Krishna. When the Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita to worship Him alone, it is to be understood that worshiping Lord Krishna includes worshiping all that is mentioned, because He, Lord Krishna, includes everyone. When the Lord is described as formless in the Vedic literatures, it is to be understood that all these forms mentioned above, within the experience of universal knowledge, are different exhibitions of the Lord's transcendental potencies only, and none of them factually represents the transcendental form of the Lord. But when the Lord actually descends on the earth or anywhere within the universe, the less intelligent class of men also mistake Him to be one of them, and thus they imagine the transcendence to be formless or impersonal. Factually, the Lord is not formless, nor does He belong to any of the multiforms experienced within the universal forms. One should try to know the truth about the Lord, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, great generators of living beings like Daksha, Prajapati, yourselves, Narada, the Kumaras, heavenly demigods like Indra, Chandra. And everyone else. In other words, anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, mental and perceptual dexterity, strength, forgiveness, beauty, modesty, opulence, and breeding, whether in form or formless, may appear to be the specific truth in the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna declares, "For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me." And Krishna explains very nicely how to perceive Him everywhere and in everything. Because by the Lord's multifarious energies, everything has been created, everything is being maintained, and ultimately everything is being destroyed. Whatever we see is a manifestation or transformation of the Lord's own personal potencies. Whatever originates in God manifests itself through His creation. But Krishna is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. There is nothing that can possibly exist that doesn't have its cause or origin in Krishna. Janmadyasho yataha. From Him everything emanates. He is the source of all creation. So in that sense, a devotee understands that nothing can ever be separate from Krishna. In fact, everything is Krishna. But simultaneously, Krishna explains in Gita, although everything is non-different than him, still he remains separate. And the common example is that of the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine is nothing but the sun, but yet the sun always remains the separate source of the sunshine. When the sunshine comes into the room, we may say the sun has come, but in truth, the sun has not come. The sun is so great. How great is the sun? It is what man has to do just to maintain the electricity within a town or a village or a city. They have to go and they have to power plants. They need so much fuel. They have to go digging so hard, so much coal, just to keep the level of the light and electricity on the same level takes tremendous amounts of effort. And still, there are blackouts. There are power failures. We see them all the time, everywhere in the world. Even big, big, great, famous cities like New York City. Srila Prabhupada was once there, and there was a massive blackout. All electricity finished. For days and days and days, the whole city stopped. It was paralyzed because there was no electricity. And when that happens in the winter, everyone freezes. People die because there's no electricity. It happens everywhere. Because somehow or other, they're working so hard, they have to tax the citizens so exceedingly treacherously just to maintain the energy that they're trying to somehow or other create. But look at the sun. Has the sun ever gone down in its temperature even 1 degree? The sun planet has been burning for hundreds of millions of years. How much fuel does it take to just keep a little power plant or fire going? And the sun is billions of trillions of quadrillions of times more powerful. A power plant may light up and give energy to maybe one city. But the sun is giving energy to the entire universe, to all the planets in the universe. And factually, whatever energy is coming from our power plants is being derived from the sun, depending on their source of energy. Because actually, what is coal? Coal is what most is used. Coal is, the sun goes in the ground, and the sun makes trees grow, and the heat and the energy of the sun enters into the wood of the tree. And that's why when you take a tree and you light it on fire, it produces heat and light. Because the energy of the sun is stored in the wood. But what the heat and fire of light is, of wood, is simply the release of the energy of the sun that has been stored in it. And over thousands and thousands and thousands of years, the roots and the trees, you know, they go underground and they turn into coal. What is coal? It is just the concentrated energy of what has been stored by the sun. Whatever energy there is that can create these potencies is simply coming from the sun. What is the power of the sun? Who is managing the sun? Hundreds and billions of years the sun is shining bright. And we know there'll never be a blackout for the sun. Nobody has the slightest fear of that. It will always shine. Whether it's our karma to actually get that shine, that is another thing. Some places in the world, people have such karma. They're living in the North Pole or Alaska, the top parts. It's very cold. Hardly any heat of the sun. But that is their karma. They're living in ice. But the sun is burning. The sun is shining for the whole universe. And Srila Prabhupada explains, this is just a fragment of the power of Krishna. How he keeps the sun burning so bright without cessation for so long. This is the inconceivable potency of the Lord in its very, very fragmental state within this material cosmos. So we can understand through these analogies how everything is coming by the powers of God. And even the greatest, most incredible displays of opulence within this world, they are hardly even a tiny, insignificant manifestation of the Lord's potencies. Through the sun and the moon, all life and all growth is taking place. The sun evaporates the waters from the ocean and creates clouds and creates rains, which makes beautiful little seeds grow into wonderful vegetables and fruits and trees. This is the potency of the Lord. And without these potencies, no one can survive. And it is the Lord who has manufactured every species of life, all 8,400,000. And it is the Lord who empowers with a particular intelligence and with a particular ability every species of life. God is great. And yet He is working in these ways simply by giving a little bit of His power to various demigods. He doesn't even do it directly, because it is below Him. He is Rasaraj. He is playing with gopis and gopas. He doesn't deal with this material creation directly. But through the planary portions of the expansions of the expansions of the expansions of Lord Vishnu, He is manifesting the opulences and excellences of this material creation. And a devotee understands how God is displaying His wonderful qualities in everything we see, everything we experience through our senses in this world. And therefore, a devotee is always illuminated, enlightened, and enriched in his love for God in every experience of life, because he simply sees Krishna. A devotee is never envious, because a devotee has no desire to compete with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People in this world are envious of one another because they are always wanting to compete. They want to be the enjoyer. They want to be the controller of whatever sphere or realm they are living within. And as long as you have the slightest tinge of desire to control or enjoy, that means you want the position of God. Because God is the only controller and only enjoyer. And when we see someone else controlling or enjoying better than us, we become envious. If someone is more learned, if someone is more beautiful, if someone is more wealthy, if someone has better abilities, if someone has something that we want, we become envious. Why is that? And in the competition of this world, everyone is thinking in terms of I and mine. It's like we have seen here in India, you have your cricket matches between Pakistan and India, and everyone is thinking, let us win. It is a question of national dignity that we win this match. And in every country we have these things. Little do they know that Krishna is empowering both of you. If the other person wins, you should praise God that God has given them so much power. This is wonderful. Why we're so sad when we lose? Because we think it's their power and we think it's our power. We forget it's Krishna's power. It is a fact. People commit suicide when the home team loses. We have seen. Why? If we understand, actually, the home team, whatever, we are trying our best and Krishna's giving us powers. And Krishna's also giving them power. If he gives them more power, it's Krishna's power. It's not theirs. It's not Pakistan's power or Sri Lanka's power. It's Australia's power. It's Krishna's power. He can make us run. He can make us jump. He can make us do anything. How he's empowering the lower animals. If they wanted to have a cricket team, they would destroy everybody. Tigers and lions. In this way, Krishna is empowering. So, and wherever we see something very great and very powerful, the devotee bows down and thinks, oh, Krishna is manifesting such wonder through this. The power of the tiger or the lion, king of the jungles. So much speed, so much precision. A devotee sees the glory of God being manifested through this part of creation. And even the great scientists, they are making so many wonderful discoveries through technology. People become completely infatuated and bewildered by the advanced modern techniques of various computers. Even when I go to Hare Krishna temples, people say, did you see the latest thing my computer can do? I don't know what is a computer. All I know is Krishna is empowering these people to make all of these little things happen in the computers. It's all Krishna. He is the intelligence of the intelligent. So wherever we see anything that's beautiful and amazing, we should simply be bowing down at the lotus feet of Krishna. Because Krishna manifests these opulences within the world just to attract our hearts back to him. And when we learn what is Krishna consciousness, everything attracts our hearts back to Krishna. No envy. Pleasure. We take pleasure in seeing Krishna's excellences manifesting. Whoever it's coming through. Sometimes even devotees become envious of each other. This person is more successful than me, or this person is doing better than me. But we have to understand that it's Krishna manifesting. Wherever we see Krishna manifesting by somebody who's speaking nicely or somebody who's doing nice puja or doing nice cooking, we should think, oh, how wonderful Krishna is. How beautiful. Let me just be an instrument. Whatever way Krishna wants to use me, let me be that. If he wants to keep me very humble and manifests himself in a very simple way through me, that's all right. If he wants to manifest himself through me in a very grandiose, wonderful way, let me always remain humble and know that it is only by his power and his will. The Maya consciousness is we want to take credit. But the Krishna consciousness is to give Krishna credit. All glories to our Guru Maharaj, all glories to Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. And that is the state, Krishna explains, by which we can be happy. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarava lokamaheshwaram suhridam sarava bhutanam gyatvamam shantimrichchati. When we understand that Krishna is the enjoyer of everything, that he is the proprietor of everything, he is the controller of all that exists, and everything is meant for his pleasure. He is the friend of all living beings. This is very important. Whatever happens in our life, it is only happening because Krishna is our friend. Because not a blade of grass can move without his sanction. Krishna is the supreme friend. Not like the materialistic friends of this world, who, if we agree on the same purpose to fulfill through sense gratification, then we become good friends. But when there's a difference of interest in sense gratification, who is our friends? Where will they be? But a real friend is one who will do anything for you. A real friend really understands what is your best interest and will help you in all regards. And there's only one person who can do like that, and that is Krishna. Because he is within your heart. Krishna knows everything of your past. He knows everything you're thinking in the present, and he knows what is your future. Someone who knows all these things, and he knows what it takes for you to realize the absolute truth. And he's sitting within your heart, and he never gives you up. What kind of friend is that? Your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your cousins, your uncles, your aunties, all of your colleagues in college, all of your colleagues in business, we call them our friends. But how long have they been with us, and how long will they continue to be with us? Generally in this life, we end up having some debate or argument and we go our own ways. Or on some rare occasions, we may actually maintain such a friendship throughout our life. But what is this life? Lord Brahma lives over 311 trillion years, and that 311 trillion years is only one blink of the eyelids for Lord Mahavishnu, who's just an insignificant expansion of Krishna. So what is the significance of one life where we have all these friends? As soon as the body dies, you never see them again, perhaps. You abandon them, they abandon you. But the Paramatma, he goes with you wherever you go. When you are in the species of a worm, Paramatma was sitting right beside you, ready to help you. When you are in a reptile and a bird and a beast and a fish, even a plant, Paramatma, Krishna, was sitting right next to you, ready to give you his mercy. And through all species of this human life, and at every moment, and we know for certain, whether we die today or die tomorrow, whether we go to heaven or hell, Krishna will be with us. He never leaves us. And he's always ready to help us if we just turn to him. What kind of friend is that? Loyal, faithful friend, through thick and thin, eternally. And he's always trying to help us. But we have to have faith that he is our friend. We should not put faith in the fallible soldiers of the so-called loved ones of this world, because they will perish. As Srila Prabhupada explains in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, all of our attachments, all of our relations of family, friendship, and love, they are just like foaming bubbles in the ocean of material existence. And the nature of these foaming bubbles is that at any moment, they will burst into oblivion. There's nothing left of them. So intelligence means putting faith in our real friend, in Krishna. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Sudadam Sarva Bhutanam, the best friend of all living beings. And he's not only the best friend for you individually, intimately, and personally, but for every living being. Krishna is seated within their heart and never leaves them for a second. From the time we enter into this cosmic manifestation to the time we go back home, back to Godhead, Krishna is always nearest and dearest to us. The soul within the heart is sitting right beside the super soul, Krishna. And he never leaves us. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki. And Krishna speaks. He speaks through the scriptures. He comes to this world because we have become so callous, so negligent of recognizing him as our friend within our heart. We have taken shelter so much of the external mind and senses and the objects that come before them, that we have conditioned ourselves where we cannot hear or see the Lord. But still, the Lord is guiding us according to our desires, because he knows what we need. But he descends in this world and speaks to us through his own mouth, through his scriptures, through the guru, through the sadhus. The guru and the sadhus are the external manifestations of the Paramatma, the Lord within our heart, speaking to us, guiding us. And he knows what's best. Therefore, we must approach guru, sadhu, and shastra with such faith, with such trust. And we must also have faith in the circumstances that happen within our lives. If a loved one dies, if we are painfully insulted, if we lose our abilities, if we lose our health, we should not think we're being cheated. We should know the intimate friend of the soul who knows us thoroughly is orchestrating this world in such a way which is best for our spiritual progress, ultimately. And sometimes the Lord will give us everything. He will give us tremendous skills, tremendous wealth. Everything is just going our way so nicely. No doubts. Things are happening by the laws of karma. But maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Krishna is controlling the karmic laws. And for a devotee, he controls the laws of nature according to what that devotee needs. Not always what you want, but what you need. Sometimes if you want the wrong thing, sometimes Krishna gives it to you. But then he frustrates you, Haribo. Then you realize, what did I want? What nonsense is this? We're longing, longing, I must have this. If only I have this, then I'll be happy. And then he says, all right, you're such a child, here it is. And then we have it and we enjoy it, and then we're frustrated by it. There's no relief. That's his mercy. The powers of Krishna are everywhere and in everything. And Krishna consciousness is the sublime method of seeing how Krishna is working. And always with a grateful heart, bowing down before the Lord with folded palms, wherever we see His excellence is manifesting. And that means everywhere, everything within this universe. Every molecular particle is a miraculous manifestation of God's energy. We may look at the wall or the ceiling, and we may think, what is this? But if you look at it close enough under microscopes, what do you see? There's all kinds of atomic molecular particles, right? And somehow or other they're combining in such a way to make this dense matter, but it's actually a miracle how it's even happening. Just to look at a wall is looking at an incredible miracle that no man can create all those subparticles. But we're so dull, we just see the wall. So what? But a devotee sees, what an incredible... We look, the eyes are so imperfect, they cannot even see what is composing that wall. Everything's moving around. It just looks still to us because we're so dull. We look at the floor. You're sitting on the floor. Well, what is this floor? Subdivide it into its components and you'll see it's an incredible civilization of various molecular atomic particles with electrons and neutrons and... Correct? I never went to college, but I read these things in Prabhupada's books. Best college. And we're sitting. We don't even feel it. We're just thinking, oh, it's just the floor. I have to clean the floor. I'm sitting on the floor. My legs are hurting. We don't recognize what an incredible creation that floor is. Man, in the farthest reaches of his technology, can never create one piece of wood from this floor. He can take those elements and mix them up and combine them and confuse them and make something. But he's getting all of his materials from Krishna. Krishna is simply wonderful. And this material existence is simply wonderful if we're Krishna conscious. If we're not Krishna conscious, it's simply miserable. Not wonderful, miserable. What's the difference between this human body and the wall and the floor? What's the difference? Just a few different combinations in molecular particles. Is this correct? That's all. So why are we not lusty for the wall? Why, when we see a beautiful man or a beautiful woman, our mind just becomes completely infatuated, intoxicated. What is this? But when we see the wall, we just walk by. Just a few little different combinations of different elements is the difference between a body and a wall or a floor. And we are so dull. We do not understand. And it is the spirit soul, which is part of Krishna, which actually gives attraction. We are attracted. Wherever we see opulences, here in Bombay, this American singer came in August, and he sang and danced. And so many tens and thousands of people were going crazy, going mad, screaming, crying, yelling, paying their hard-earned money. They told me 1.5 lakhs just to sit down. A seat. And he's singing. and you're jumping around. What is it? That person is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. And he's temporarily residing in this body made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. Dying body, flesh and blood and mucus and pus and all other things. But because that little tiny fragmental soul is within there, there's some attraction. When he dies, nobody cares. Nobody will go to pay any money to see him in his funeral. What to speak of a few days or a few months or a few years after the funeral. But as long as that little spark of the soul is there, it can manifest such incredible. And big, big, big kings and politicians, they're surrounded by so many guards, and either you like them or you hate them. But what is it about them that creates such an impression? It's that 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, the soul, manifesting a tiny, insignificant manifestation of Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna? Srila Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion that Krishna manifests 64 qualities, primary qualities. And these 64 qualities, the living entity, the spirit soul, can manifest up to 50 of those qualities in infinitesimal minute proportion. And Lord Shiva, he could manifest up to 55 of those qualities in small proportion. And Lord Narayan, Vishnu, can manifest up to 60 of those qualities. But Krishna, he manifests only Govinda, Krishna of Vrindavan, can manifest all 64 opulences. And the four special features that Krishna has, that no living entity up to Brahma, not even Shiva, not even Narayan can manifest, are the wonderful, wonderful pastimes he performs with his devotees. Two is the unexcelled, all-attractive beauty of his form. Three, the super excellent intimacy of the devotees that are always surrounding him. And four, the beauty and the sweetness of his flute. So the devotees in this Krishna consciousness movement, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are always very anxious to remember Krishna in everything, everywhere. With a desire to serve. This is the secret of perfection in life. To maintain in every situation the desire to serve. Not to enjoy, to serve. When we have that, Krishna manifests his glory everywhere, to the degree we want to serve him and please him. Even material objects, when we want to use them for Krishna's pleasure, engage them in Krishna's service, Krishna will reveal himself in those material objects. When we see wonderful, powerful creatures or people within this world, or extraordinary natural phenomena, we are always in a mood, let me serve you, Krishna. In this situation, whoever I'm with, wherever I see, whatever I hear, Let me remember you. Let me serve you. Let me please you. Let me please your devotees. It is only through that consciousness that Krishna reveals himself. And then we can actually experience the real joy, the real pleasure of living. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes?
If Krishna is a friend of all living beings, whether one is a devotee or not, and ultimately is acting for everyone's welfare, then how is it different being a devotee and not being a devotee? He's acting for everyone's welfare in any case.
The difference is that one who is not Krishna's devotee, because he is not willing to reciprocate with the love of his dear friend, his eternal friend Krishna, he is in a state of forgetfulness. And in that forgetfulness, you cannot appreciate. But a devotee, because he is always remembering Krishna in a favorable way, Krishna reciprocates by revealing himself to that devotee. And therefore a devotee experiences gradually, after purification takes place, transcendental ecstasy. Just a simple example. A father may have two sons. One is always misbehaving and going against the father, and one is always very nicely trying to please the father. So to one, the father shares the most intimate parts of his life with, and the other, he's always chastising and punishing. So who is happier? That is our choice. Any other question? Yes?
I just mentioned even dead bodies, like what dead bodies have opulence and who gets attracted to dead bodies.
What?
He's also mentioned pretha in the translation. One of the terms used is dead bodies. So what type of opulence Krishna is exhibiting through dead bodies?
For us, we don't worship dead bodies. But there are people who do. It is a fact. You go to a funeral. Sometimes they're all garlanding the dead body. They're singing songs for the dead body. Of course, for a great devotee, a saintly person, we understand his body has been the instrument for so many years for pure unalloyed devotional service and compassion to the fallen souls. So that body is actually worshipable. But for a materialistic person, we have seen the story of King Suyagya. After he died, his wives were just holding on to his body and kissing his body and embracing his body, and Yamaraj wanted to take the body away. They said, no. The soul was already gone. Yamaraj took the soul away, I'm sorry. But the people wanted to take the body away. They, no, we cannot leave him. We must have him. They were worshipping his dead body. They were loving his dead body. Ah. And even you go into the museums, they have bones of dinosaurs. People, they pay millions of dollars for these bones, right? And people come from all over the world to see these bones, and they say, oh, look at these bones. And if you go to the Egyptian section of the museum, you see these mummies from 3,000 years ago.
These little people tied up with ropes and everything. And sometimes they take them out and it's all this dead body. They pay millions of dollars for these. Huh? And people from all around come to see them and say, just look, it's a mummy from 3,000 years ago. They're all offering their namaskars to this dead body. Standing in line to see dead body. They're thinking it's something wonderful. Yes?
No, Maharaj, you're just saying that when you see somebody has a strong desire to serve and you see their enthusiasm, so you should be appreciating that quality. But what you do in that situation where you see that because of this person's enthusiasm, he'll be either very in a very nice way demanding or trying to interfere in other person's service. So do we still appreciate that quality?
Yes.
And what that person should, becomes very disturbed.
You should appreciate the quality of anyone's desire who wants to engage in devotional service. But at the same time, we should help a person to direct that natural inclination in such a way that is most pleasing to Krishna. A person may have a desire to serve, but unless that person has proper direction, the service can become a disservice. So we appreciate the desire to serve, but we should help to encourage that person to direct that desire to serve so that it is actually of maximum service. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Well, in the translation, there is expressing various planets and demigods and the various qualities. At the end of the translation, there is that these specific truths and forms of the Lord, but are not actually, they are not so, and they are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. So the truth and the transcendental potency of the Lord, aren't they synonymous, or are they different in the translation?
The last part of your question, repeat again, please.
The absolute truth and the transcendental potency of the Lord, are they synonymous or are they different? The last part of the translation, I'm not clear about it.
Okay. May appear to be the specific truth in the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment. In other words, what Prabhupada is explaining is some people considers this to be God. Just like there are classes of people who actually worship in the jungles, who worship the lion as God. Because the lion is the most powerful person in the jungle, they worship the lion as God. They worship a mountain as God because it's so powerful and so great. And some people worship human beings like God. So what Srila Prabhupada is, or what Shukadeva Goswami is explaining here, they are not God. They are a fragmental portion of the potencies of God being manifested.
Isn't that also part of the truth? If it may not be the absolute truth.
What you are saying is exactly what this is trying to convince you of. You have understood properly. It is not God, it is a partial, fragmental portion of God. A manifestation of God. But not God. There are yogis in India who can perform some tricks and people say you are God. But they are just manifesting a very small portion of God's potency to produce some ashes or produce some gold or to read your mind or to transform their body to another place.
through supernatural powers. People say, oh, this is God. But it is just such an insignificant manifestation of the power of God. We should see it as that. It's a person like you and me who has a little bit of powers of God. Little more than me, perhaps. But it is not God. So just as people in India worship people like that, people in the West, they worship movie stars and singers like God. And there are lower tribal types of people who worship animals like God, and mountains like God, anything that has these powers. But a devotee understands that Krishna is God. And he is manifesting himself through various opulences within the phenomena of this material existence. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
For further details of this cassette, please contact Radhanath Swami Tape Ministry, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Address is 7 KM Munshi Marg, Chowpatty, Bombay 400007, India.
Please chant this beautiful Maha Mantra with great feeling and attention, very loudly. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have come to relieve us of all offenses. Srila Prabhupada recommended that we first invoke their mercy.